The 3HL with Brent Daugherty and Don Davenport.
Gentlemen, 104.5 The Zone, Brent Daugherty, Don Davenport with you, talking about the NFL Super Bowl matchup is set. February 7th, Kansas City at Tampa Bay. Chiefs favored by 3. They were favored by 3 in the previous matchup this year. They also won by 3 in the previous matchup this year. Talking a lot about Tom Brady. Just kind of looking within myself and trying to figure out why I want him to lose. Wanted Jordan to win every NBA title. Wanted it. Wanted Tiger Woods to win every golf tournament he's played in. But not Tom. I don't know why.
Well, Jason on Twitter brought up a good point. And I'm just going to read his tweet because is this why? All right. You can tell me, Brent. The problem with Brady is oversaturation. He's in his 10th Super Bowl, and there have been 55. So one out of every 5.5 Super Bowls Brady has been in on. Jordan won 3, 2-year break, then won 3 more, didn't last nearly as long. Is that what it is? Is it the decade after decade of Tom Brady in your face? Is it the coming off of a dynasty run with the Patriots and – is that it? Because I am all about this Tom Brady with the Bucks, with a different franchise, without Belichick. It's Brady that's a little more fun. It's you forget about the cheating scandal Brady, you know, you forget about, I mean, you kind of forget about everything else because you look at him and you think, man, this guy's just having a ball here at the end of his career. And then you look at Aaron Rodgers, who is not having a ball at the end of his career, right? Because of what went down in Green Bay. And then they, you know, don't put the ball in his hands to win the game in the championship game. But that's a conversation for our 5 o'clock hour, probably. But so I love that Tom Brady, but is that it? Is it the oversaturation of Tom Brady for you?
I think definitely that has something to do with it. I would think that that's probably true. Yes. I mean, think about this and look, I'm not hating on the guy that, it's unbelievable how successful that dude has been. And nobody saw that coming from Michigan. Nobody saw it coming. That, like, hey, man, this dude in that weird combine picture is going to be the best quarterback in the history of the sport. And it, Don, you're right. It's not debatable now. I mean, it's not even, you don't even say arguably the greatest of all time. He just is.
He just solidified it.
So, again, I go back to I knew that Michael Jordan was the best player ever, and I appreciated watching WGN Chicago Bulls games as many times as I could because I couldn't get enough of it because I knew I was watching the best. But here we are. We're watching the best ever still. But it's funny because, like, this Brady played exceptionally well this year, but he has made some throws that you're like, oh, my gosh, what was that? You know,
No doubt. There were two of them yesterday.
But if anybody gets near him in the pocket, he chucks it. It's going up, you know, which is fine. I mean, he's 68 years old. I don't want the Bernie Sanders meme in the pocket getting hit. But here he is in the Super Bowl again, and it's number 10 out of 55. That's 18.2% of them. That's absolutely phenomenal. 615-737-1045. 615-737-1045. Lucas is producing us today, and Lucas writes in our chat on Zoom, Pat Summit, the pumpkin lady, just called, and she wants on to talk about Tom Brady.
From Murfreesboro.
Okay. Pat Summit, the pumpkin lady.
Okay, next up on Brent and Don, I called in a couple of years ago and talked about my son working for Pat Summit, and she told him never go home for Thanksgiving without a pumpkin pie.
I absolutely remember that. Yeah, and he showed up. She cooked with him.
I thought you might remember that.
Yep.
But here's my take on Tom Brady. First of all, I don't like him either. He was so arrogant at New England. I did see a little softening yesterday, but I'm still done with him. So, Brent, here's the thing. We need for him to win so he'll go away. I'm afraid if he loses, he'll want to come back again and prove something again.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I think he's coming back whether he wins or loses, don't you? Like, he's still got it. I mean, he doesn't look like Ben out there that, you know, you can't throw it 12 yards.
Right.
He didn't look like Drew Brees. And Drew, look, Drew had a lot going on. We have no idea, like, how banged up inside he is with that rib problem and all that stuff. But he couldn't throw, like, a 12-yard out route. Seriously. Yeah. And all these guys have just fallen. Phillip Rivers had a hard time with it too. He's another one, man. If anybody got near him in the pocket, he was chucking it.
Heck yeah. I mean, imagine after that many years of taking hits, of course you're going to chuck it.
Yeah. I mean, when you're as old as they are, I mean, you're already taking aspirin daily for all the, you know, creaks in your body. So, you don't want to get hit by a 300-pound dude too, right?
No.
So I don't know. I
can't imagine the creaks they have. I know that they take better care of their bodies, but like I walk up and down the stairs and like my knees crunch. Like it is crunchy. I think I told everybody like at one point this
your
was
knees are crunchy.
Yeah, this was a couple of months ago. At one point I thought that I had tape or something on the bottom of my shoe. Like when I was walking down hard stairs. I thought that there was like plastic or tape on the bottom, stuck to the bottom of my shoe because it was making that noise. Oh no, it was my freaking knees. It was my knees like crunching. So I can't imagine what their bodies have been through. I mean, I played a sport where you're jumping on a hardwood court, you know, over and over. So obviously there's some, you know, there's some trauma to joints and knees and all that from years of playing volleyball. But I can't imagine their bodies playing that sport for that long. And I get that at that quarterback position, you're a little bit more protected, but you're still taking hits.
I'm just I'm just a dude walking around, but I promise you, if we took x-rays of both my knees, I bet I have torn ACLs in both of them. I promise. Like they just click, you know, like,
yeah.
Like I'm with you. Like you're not supposed to make that sound. Anyway,
I need to be on the TB12 world, apparently.
Yeah, the younger members of the 3HL crew, it'll hit you at some point. So I don't know. I will say this. It's weird. And I love the exercise of this show of talking through things because I'm actually talking myself through my feelings for Tom Brady on an emotional sports fan level. And I'm also ever so slightly leaning more toward Tampa Bay as we continue to talk about this. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Cause I'm coming at you with, look how likable he is. You should like him. Brady, Brady, Brady.
Well, and he met his wife on a blind date. Like, I mean,
no,
the
you
luck
should
of this
like
dude.
Him for that. Yeah.
The luck on this dude. Somebody sent us a message about that. They had met their wife and they have a 5-year-old met his wife, in 2011 on a blind date. Here it is, Carl. I married my blind date from 2011. We have a beautiful 5-year-old. There you go.
Oh, I love that. God, yeah. COVID has like just put blind dates out the freaking window right now. Huh?
Yeah, what do? You do like a Zoom blind date?
I guess. I do have a single friend that has done Zoom like happy hours to get to know somebody. How crazy is that?
How does that even work? Is there like 9 people on the Zoom or just her and
no,
and
it's
a guy?
Like one-on-one. You just like you grab a drink and you Zoom and like have a drink together. But how awkward is that if you want to be done? I mean, it's not like you can just, it's easy to be like, okay, well, I got to go. See ya. I mean, you got to be like, all right, hey, I'm going to leave this Zoom. See ya.
Oh,
what,
I don't know
anybody
what happened.
Out there, fill us in. Fill us in on dating life during COVID-19.
Yeah,
how does it work?
You could just leave the chat and then, I mean, you'll never see him again. And if you do, you could be like, oh, I don't know what happened. I lost my feed. I don't know. That's on me. It's me, not you.
Right.
Chris Lowe coming up. The latest on the Tennessee coaching search. I keep hearing randomly about PJ Fleck, James Franklin. I don't think James Franklin is realistic. In terms of becoming the next Tennessee coach, I think
I'm not sure if there's Tennessee fans that would be happy with that choice if it was me.
That's another one, man. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and PJ Fleck, he's done amazing things at Minnesota, but he would come. I mean, he would be like Butch Jones times 10 with all those sayings and everything.
Everybody says that, but here's the deal. His sayings have been the exact same from the get-go, and I know because I covered him in his like second year at Western Michigan in a bowl game, in the Idaho Potato Bowl. So, like, his sayings have been the same from the get-go, and dude delivers on him. I mean, that's all I'm going to say. Half the reason Butch's sayings didn't work is because he quit winning. He quit having success.
Yeah, so row your boat works if you're winning.
Yeah, I mean, hey, he's been rowing that boat to W's.
By the way, Butch Jones was on Blaine and Mickey's show, and he said, all coaches have those sayings. He said, I was probably a little too public with them, which is true. And he said the brick by brick thing came through a conversation he was having with John Gruden. So he put it on John Gruden.
Oh, that's so brilliant.
Which is phenomenal. But anyway, yeah,
you can know how much that guy has learned in his past 4 years with Nick Saban. I can't even imagine.
The whole Tennessee thing was a very humbling experience for him. Yep. So I think he'll do. People hate it that we're even talking about Butch Jones, like Tennessee fans, but I think he'll do well at Arkansas State. We'll see. When we come back, Chris Lowe with the latest on the Tennessee coaching search. Stay tuned. 3HL 104.5 The Zone. 3HL on 104.5 The Zone. Anything going on in Knoxville today? I don't know.
There's like flight tracking and I mean, all kinds of crazy stuff going on. Actually, I think this all went on about 3 years ago, right?
Yeah, and 5 years before that, and 1 year before that. It's been a cycle. Chris Lowe, ESPN.com, joins us. I'm sure we'll talk a lot about the Tennessee situation. Chris, what's up? How are you?
Hey, Brent, just got back. Just picking up some goodies at Weigel's, and Belichick was there, Parcells was there, and I thought I saw John Gruden pull in the parking lot.
You had to go Gruden. I mean, you were going down such a funny path, and then you threw in Gruden. You get like Swiss cake rolls or something. I don't know. I mean,
no, those are Little Debbie. You're thinking about Saban. Now, Saban was not there, but Saban likes the Little Debbie snack cakes.
Like, if I'm the Haslams, why not pay Nick Saban like $50 million and just say, go do it, man?
He still probably wouldn't do it.
Probably wouldn't.
I think Nick makes about 10, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you want some entertainment, go through my Twitter mentions on Friday evening when I threw out that Lane Kiffin wouldn't be the Tennessee coach. It's funny about that guy, man. It's like all we do is put out the information, right? And then if it's involving Lane Kiffin, Chris, you know this as well as anybody. You get the people that hate him and the people that love him. Like, he is one of the most divisive guys in the game.
I think Lane sort of likes it that way. Yeah, I really do. I think he sort of sits back and sort of eats that up. You know, that's just sort of who he is. And first of all, he couldn't care less what you or me or Dawn or anybody else thinks. He just sort of does his thing, and he's who he is. He's not phony. And that's one of the things I like about him, is he's exactly who you think he is. But no, he's not going to be in this coach search. And although I think he would do a good job, I think he would – there'd be a lot of people who didn't like him, but I think there would be a big portion of the Tennessee fan base who would get pretty energized about Lane Kiffin coming back to the Hill. But yeah, I think probably there's no reason to talk about it right now because it's not going to happen.
So no go on Kiffin. Let me just go down a little list here. Brian Kelly, Notre Dame. No go on Kelly?
No. No.
What about Jeff Fisher?
I mean, it seems like Fisher's name's come up with a couple jobs here recently, has it?
Well, I think Fisher's throwing his name.
Yes.
So he's sort of acting as his own agent, is what you're telling me.
He has been very open about wanting a college job, I think. On every radio station he's been on, I've heard him say, well, I might be interested in that.
You know, that's one of those scenarios, one of those names where, you know, the guy's coached at the highest level, he's had success, and it sounds good. If we're in, like, to fantasy coach search, but, you know, getting back into the college or doing college football after being out, you know, and not being around college football forever, that's a tough adjustment. So I would say probably no.
James Franklin.
Wouldn't say 1,000% no, because I know James well enough, and you do too, that I think he's always going to probably listen a little bit. Mm-hmm. He enjoyed living in Nashville and Tennessee the last time, did an unbelievable job. I don't know that in my lifetime we'll ever see Vanderbilt have that kind of run again that he had when he was there.
Consecutive 9-win season, yeah. The only time in their history.
And was 2-1 against Tennessee, and the only loss was in overtime. But he's got, I still think Penn State is an elite job. He's done a terrific job there. He's making about $6 million a year. There'd have to be a really, really compelling reason. Maybe one we don't know about, that he's not happy there or feels like he's done all he can. But I know. I think at the end of the day, no. I don't think that's probably going to happen either.
PJ Fleck.
No. I think there's a report out there today that's not going to happen. I don't think PJ's done a nice job there. I don't think he's a fit at Tennessee.
All right. So that leaves us down the path, Don, of Tony Elliott, perhaps?
Yeah, and let me say this. I think Tennessee, to Danny White's credit, he's using the Parker search firm. You don't pay a search firm unless they go out and kick the tires with a lot of people. That's what they do. And they try to do it behind the scenes so people don't know, so they can legitimately gauge interest. And I think that's what they've been doing. And I think they've swung at some big names. I bet you they swung at Luke Fickell. Probably Matt Campbell, probably Franklin. A lot of these guys, the names you hear out there, Fleck, I'm sure has been on that list, to sort of see, hey, is this something that you would potentially be interested in? And I think any kind of hit they get, they go back to Danny White with. So I do think, regardless of who it is, it would not be fair for Tennessee fans to say, well, gosh, they didn't go after any big names. Well, yeah, I think they did go after some big names, but I don't know that there's a lot of big names out there right now that are really lining up to come to Tennessee because of some of the issues they're going to be facing. But you mentioned Tony Elliott. I certainly think Tony Elliott is a candidate. And I think he is probably, when you look at assistants right now in college football, he's perhaps the hottest commodity. He's from the Dabo umbrella. He's a play caller. Good luck in finding anybody in college football who doesn't have the utmost respect for him as a person. As a guy who's recruited in the Southern footprint, the SEC footprint, he's not been a head coach. How does that work against him? Does Tennessee want to go back down that road of hiring a coordinator? See, I don't think that should be a reason not to hire a guy because the last guy didn't work out. I think Sonny Dykes is someone that's high on Tennessee's list. And he checks, he's that offensive. He's a little bit of a niche offensive guy. His offenses have had a lot of success. He's coached in the Power Five, didn't have a lot of success at Cal. He had one decent year there. He had some success at Louisiana Tech. And I think when you look at what he's done at SMU, he sort of helped turn that program around. I think they won 10 games 2 years ago, which is the most they've won there since 1984. And again, when you're looking for an offensive guy, a guy that, he's from that Mike Leach, Hal Mummy tree, has coached a number of different places in a number of different areas. He's got a lot of deep Texas roots. I think he's somebody that Tennessee is going to look at pretty hard. And I'm not saying he's going to get the job, but I think he's certainly someone who is in the mix.
Is that – I'm not sure that the Tennessee fan base would be jumping up and down over a Sonny Dykes hire. If that ends up happening, what is your take on, and honestly, I know it's a hard fan base to please, but you talk about Tennessee going after kind of those big names. I wouldn't put a Sonny Dykes in with that, obviously.
I would agree with you, Dawn. I don't think that the fan base would be jumping up and down about Sonny Dykes. But you know what? I think at this point, Tennessee's brass, in this case, Danny White, he needs to go hire who he thinks is the best guy, the best fit, somebody that he's comfortable with, someone that he feels like is going to do it right and win. And pardon my French, be damned with the Tennessee fan base. I mean, that didn't get Tennessee. Look where that got Tennessee the last time. There were revolts and Twitter riots and people, state legislators jumping into the middle of Tennessee's coach search. Remember how that coach search ended? It ended with a guy that just got fired for NCAA violations.
Yeah.
Now listen, hindsight is 20/20. That goes for all of us, me included. But I think that's why you pay a guy like Danny White almost $2 million. right? You give him a 5-year contract. You pay $2.5 million just to get him out of his deal at UCF to come and try to provide some stability and hire the best football coach, regardless of what Chris Lowe says or Don Davenport or Brent Daugherty or anybody on Vol Twitter. You know, and it doesn't matter if you win the press conference. If you think this guy can help you win football games and can do it, you know, I think Tennessee's got to get out of this mode of, oh gosh, you know, Twitter's erupted or the message boards or talk radio or Chris Lowe's not going to like it or Bruce Feldman's not going to like it. You know, you got to be confident in what you do. And I think everybody that I've talked to that knows Danny White will tell you above everything else, he's a pretty confident guy. And again, I don't think you pay that kind of cash to bring in an AD to make this decision, which is, listen, the decision that's going to make or break him is who hires his head football coach. Because you guys know my saying, if football ain't right at Tennessee, nothing's right. So, but you don't pay that kind of money to bring in a guy who's worried about what everybody else thinks. He's got to be confident enough and secure enough in his own skin to hire who he thinks is the best guy.
I think Douglas Adair Dickey used to say that.
The ultimate administrator. The tall man. My favorite, I've got so many Douglas Adair Dickey-isms, but I used to love it when someone would talk to him about the NCAA, which is probably appropriate now with the NCAA probably staring down Tennessee here in the next few months. But he'd always say, you know, you just don't ever want them on your campus, okay? You don't want them on your campus because I promise you, they're not coming to tailgate.
You know, we got into that Chris Lowe from ESPN.com with us. We got into a little Douglas Adair Dickey talk the other day, and somebody called in about how back in the day, like he's been a fan forever, and he couldn't stand Doug Dickey coming from Florida and all that stuff. And we started to talk about how, I mean, could you imagine if Dan Mullen just quit as the Florida coach and became athletics director at Tennessee?
Well, and people don't forget that when they hired Doug Dickey as AD, he was not a very popular hire at all. I think you were just pointing out, people were like, how did you bring this guy back? He left us to go coach football at Florida, and you're bringing him back as AD? Well, Doug Dickey was as good an AD in the last 20, 30 years as you're going to find in the SEC, heck, in college football.
Real quick about Danny White, from everybody, because I didn't know him from anybody. But talking to people around that world, that AD world, the couple of things that I kept hearing were that they were surprised that Tennessee went after a guy like that and were willing to pay that kind of money to get a guy like that, and that he's kind of an outside the box thinker. So there are people that don't like him, for various reasons, but that it's an exceptional hire. What are you hearing?
A little bit of the same, you know, that he's got a pretty big ego, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I think most successful people do. Certainly someone who leads a multi-million dollar athletic program, he's not afraid to be innovative, to think outside the box. He's going to try new things. He's going to, you know, he believes in himself. He comes from a family that's immersed in sports and sports administration. You know, his brother's a head basketball coach at Florida. So he's been around it. He was an athlete himself. And someone, I think, that when you look at the UCF program, was pretty innovative there in the way they were able to raise funds, do some things there in the stadium. He oversaw the building of the standalone football facility. And you look at sort of where UCF is now, where it was when he got there. I think he, without question, raised that brand. He raised the profile. And the thing, I think, if you look back and you don't really know Danny, but you look back and you step back, you try to look at it completely unbiased, you know, yeah, they paid him a lot of money, but he wasn't afraid to come here and take on this challenge. It's not going to be easy. I mean, you're looking at it, NCAA sanctions. And first thing you got to do is you get on the job is you got to hire a head football coach amid NCAA sanctions. And let's face it, a place that's pretty much a mess right now. And he didn't blink. They went, they offered him a big deal. He said, yeah, I'm ready to take on the challenge. And here he is. So I think that's the part of it. You want somebody like that, Brent and Dawn, who's eager to get in there, roll his sleeves up and do what it takes to do, you know, to get Tennessee back. He talked a lot about the brand, and there's two ways to look at it. And I think you do this in the coach search too. Some people will be scared by what they jump into, whether you're an AD or head football coach. But there's other people, and I think Danny's certainly one of these, who says, you know what? I want to be that person that restores Tennessee to its past glory, and that's the kind of guy you want to find as head football coach.
Chris Lowe, ESPN.com. All right, so, Chris, you've got Sonny Dykes and Tony Elliott as candidates. Who else are you thinking?
You know what? And my ego's not too big, or I don't have too much pride to say this. I guarantee you there's somebody else out there that I don't know about, that we don't know about, somebody else that Danny's engaged with. I think Neil Brown, there's been several reports that he says he's not in it. I did see a report out of Minneapolis just before we came on the show that Fleck is not a candidate. But now these things change. Coach search are fluid situations. You know, sometimes you're not a candidate and somebody throws $3 or $4 more million at you and you all of a sudden are a candidate. You know, but I bet you there's somebody else out there that we don't know about and we're not talking about. And I don't, you know, at this point, I don't know who that would be. I do think if they go coordinator route, that Tony Elliott makes the most sense. You mentioned Sonny Dykes. I mean, I think he checks all the offensive boxes. We'll see. You know, we'll see if they can somehow get in front of a James Franklin. I think of all the names you mentioned, the biggest home run hire would be James Franklin. I really do. But I don't know, again, when you just start looking at finances and where James is now and the fact that he's got a really good job at Penn State, I don't know that you can make it a compelling enough case to get him out of state college.
Did you ever hear legitimately Matt Campbell's name?
Not really. I didn't. He's got a big buyout. He's going to have a really good football team next year. And I think he's a Midwest guy. I mean, I don't know that he's really interested. Much the same as Luke Fickell. I heard Luke Fickell's name more than I did Matt Campbell. Mm-hmm. But I think Fickell's in line for, you know, several of those jobs up there in the Midwest, Big Ten. And invariably, one or two of them are going to come open in the next couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, those two guys might be competing for the same jobs if the right ones come open.
Yeah. And the other name we heard a lot earlier this year in jobs was Billy Napier in Louisiana. Yeah. I have not really heard his name in connection with Tennessee. And I think Billy has been very selective about what he wants. And he's turned down a lot of jobs. So that's another one that I have not really heard in connection with the Tennessee job.
Yeah, Don and I have talked about him quite a bit because he seems to be good where he is, and he's had a chance to be in the mix. Tony Elliott has too, has had a chance to be in the mix, and it feels like Napier's waiting for something specific.
You know, I think he's a little bit like Sarkisian. Now, it's different because Sark had been a coach at big-time schools, Washington and USC, but I remember talking to Sark about this, you know. He had a chance last year to go to Colorado, Mississippi State, and having been to Bama a bunch over the last year or two, I asked him, I said, what are you waiting on? He said, a big one. Well, guess what? He got a big one. He got Texas. And I think Napier is sort of like that. You know, does Mullen go to the NFL from Florida in a year? You know, Florida would be a big one. You know, he's in Louisiana. Does something happen in a year or two at LSU? You know, what about Virginia Tech? I mean, there's other jobs. You know, Florida State, I mean, that job seems to turn over pretty quickly, has recently. You know, so we'll see. I just think Billy is selective enough and picky enough that he's going to sort of wait and see what else is out there. Plus, he likes his AD a lot at Louisiana, and he's had a ton of success there.
You think Tennessee's going to be quick with this? Do you think it's happening this week?
You know what? I think it will happen this week. I don't think he's going to rush. I think, you know, Danny's savvy enough to sort of make sure he absolutely exhausts, you know, every possibility. But I do think he's talking to people today, tomorrow, and I would be very surprised if by the end of the week, you know, maybe by Wednesday, Thursday, if Tennessee doesn't have a head football coach.
On the way out, get ready for your mentions. SEC Mike listening in tweeted, ESPN's Chris Lowe shares that he believes Tony Elliott and Sonny Dykes are candidates to watch for Tennessee head coaching search during an appearance on 3HL in Nashville. So get ready for the Tennessee fans.
I do believe Tony Elliott and Sonny Dykes are both candidates, but I think there are also other candidates out there. And I do think, again, there's always that one person that maybe we don't talk about.
Right.
Don't really know that's a candidate that has done a good job of sort of keeping their name. Not that Sonny Dykes, Tony Elliott, or anybody has pushed themselves, but has done a good job of keeping their name out of it that may be there. There's always that curveball.
Appreciate you, Chris. Always fun talking with you. And, man, appreciate the info.
You bet. It's good to be with you guys. Take care.
All right. That's CeeLo ESPN on Twitter. When we come back, we'll visit with Buck Rising. Talk a little Titans football next on 104.5 The Zone. 3HL on 104.5 The Zone. Buck Rising in the mix now. And always enjoy our visits with Buck Rising from A to Z Sports, Nashville.com. Buck, what's up? How are you?
What is going on? Hope everybody had a delightful weekend. Hope you're in the mood for coach search talk, because it's not just infecting your favorite college football team, but there's plenty of it going on in the pros as well.
There is. The press conference of the year so far is Dan Campbell talking about how he's going to bite your knees off. And when he gets back up, he's going to do it again. I mean, I was like, whoa.
There's not even a word for what Dan Campbell is, other than like the next evolution, or, you know, I don't know if it's like the previous evolution or the next evolution of football meathead, but I'm delighted by it. I'm very, very, he's good for a clip. I don't know if he's worth a damn as a coach, but we've seen a very, very small sample size. In fact, he did emerge victorious over the Tennessee Titans in his first interim win. But yeah, we'll see if he can surround himself with competent coordinators, because the last sample size of Dan Campbell, Man Campbell, I think we should call him Man Campbell, not Dan Campbell. It wasn't all that impressive, other than he talks low and he could probably whoop us.
I mean, probably. Those are two very important things, right? Like when you're finding a head football coach in the NFL, a guy could whoop us all.
Mike Vrabel fits that classification. I don't know about 100%. The rest of the NFL head coaches. And now everybody wants the cage match between Man Campbell and Mike Vrabel. So we will see when all that comes to play. But, you know, as Vrabel said, if beating up or if fighting all the other head coaches would give his team a competitive advantage, he would fight them all. And I'm sure Man Campbell feels the exact same way.
Do you think that A.J. Brown should have apologized for his post-op live look-in?
Let me answer your question with another question. Are there people dumb enough to demand an apology of A.J. Brown for his IG live?
That's what I'm saying.
Post-op live look-in.
He apologized. And that was my whole take, was why are you apologizing?
So I understand. Actually, you know, I really don't understand why the team is so tight about this kind of stuff after the season. Like, if you don't want to acknowledge what's going on with the player's physical well-being or availability in season, that is your right. We have no choice but to respect it. But after the season, like, everybody chill out. And I'm sure that's where the greatest cause or friction was coming from the team, because I'm sure when John Robinson saw that his star wide receiver was on IG Live doped up post-op, he probably wasn't thrilled by the proposition of that. I'm sure many, many executives and coaches in the NFL would feel similarly. But like the whole thing just looks like an innocent mistake by a young NFL player who does what many young athletes and many, many people our age, and I'll lump myself in with this. I'm not drugged up going on IG Live on a regular basis. Maybe that would benefit my career. We'll see. But I would say, listen, Dawn, for the right price, we can arrange all of these things. I'm very, very open to sell my self-respect and dignity for a couple of bucks. Anyway, nobody should be demanding an apology of AJ Brown. If you want to demand apologies from anybody for their behavior on Instagram, perhaps Isaiah Wilson is the person whom you should direct your scorn towards, because one is innocent, the other one looks like an idiot, and there are very, very clear and obvious differences between the two.
Buck Rising with us from A to Z Sports. Buck, your tweet. Which one of you dummies is going to be first on here with the Titans would have gone to the Super Bowl with Brady take? How many did you get coming at you?
I mean, there was, I think there was upwards of damn near 200 responses to that tweet, and that's ignoring the quote tweets that I got a result. Listen, people are, it's not that people are dumb. It's sometimes they behave or they display the behavior of people who are dumb. And it's not a personal attack when I tell you that you're a dummy for thinking that Tom Brady would have elevated this particular Tennessee Titans team to the place that they, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, now find themselves in. It's that you lack perspective. It's that you are a victim of recency bias. And so perhaps I will grant you some grace in that regard. But if you think that 43-year-old Tom Brady in this offense, which is not built for pocket primarily, or not totally regimented around a pocket passing drop back quarterback, as Tampa Bay's offense is, and with the defense that the Tennessee Titans trotted out that helped Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers stay alive, very, very much so, against Aaron Rodgers potentially making a comeback, then you are just clearly not paying attention, or have forgotten in the couple of weeks since the Tennessee Titans have gotten bounced from the playoffs, just how big of a liability that defense was. Nobody, 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 nobody would look at Tom Brady in this offense and say, yes, he would be a better fit here in Tennessee than he is in Tampa Bay. The Buccaneers this year, they are the one example of the team that is actually a player away from contention. That never happens. You never get the greatest of all time, literally the greatest of all time, to just drop into the middle of your roster that is already largely stacked with offensive skill, position talent, and defensive studs, and say, okay, now we can elevate ourselves from a guy who threw 30-plus interceptions to literally the greatest quarterback of all time. And, yeah, he'll turn it over a little bit more because no risk it, no biscuit, Bruce Arians. That's what he does. But we have the defense to help keep us in these games and help kind of mitigate what positions that offense might put you in when you are risking field position with the turnover-prone throws that they choose to make.
So you like Tampa or Kansas City in the Super Bowl?
Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes is God amongst man. Like, this is not even it's going to be competitive because Tom Brady, as I've just spent my time saying, Tom Brady is the greatest of all time. And so you can't ever rule Tom out in some kind of, you know, flukish Malcolm Butler goal line interception thing. These things happen to Brady. But Patrick Mahomes is the greatest player that I have ever seen at the position. And yeah, I've got a little bit of a smaller sample size than many people listening to this, I'd imagine, but there's nothing that I see that looks like he is capable of stopping. Like, I often am amazed at broadcasters who keep themselves like composed while watching the throws or the replays of the throws that he makes, because I would absolutely drop an F-bomb in the middle of all of those things, asking what the F is that when he makes a throw falling down on a bad foot, sidearmed to a diving Tyreek Hill that goes for 45 yards. Like, it's wild.
Going to be fun. Love it. Tom Brady, the Titans. So that'll happen again after next season, right? We'll strike all that back up.
Oh, sure. He's going to play until the end of time. It's no longer Tom versus time. Tom has kicked time's ass, and now the rest of us just have to sit back and watch it play out, because we have nothing to do except hopefully, I think that the biggest thing that I hope people do is that I hope they appreciate, no matter how much you hate Tom, no matter how much you hate how much he wins, I hope that people really do appreciate what they're watching on a regular basis, year in and year out with him, because there's not a precedent for what he is.
Great stuff, Buck. Appreciate you, man, as always.
See ya.
We'll check in next Monday at Buck Rising on Twitter, at A to Z Sports, A to Z Sports Nashville.com. Lots of Tennessee things to get into when we come back. One of the players that entered the portal is headed to a Big 12 school. We've got that for you. Also, two names that Chris Lowe threw out there. One's getting a lot of reaction on the internet. He mentioned Tony Elliott and Sonny Dykes as candidates. Also said there's probably someone out there that nobody knows about as well, but one of those guys is getting a ton of reaction on Twitter.
Let's chat about it.
615-737-1045. You want to get in that way? We'll be right back.